I'm Demelo Roberts, stage and studio on Arts Watch. Sarah Jane Hardy has been the artistic director of Northwest Children's Theatre for a couple of decades. Since she left her native Liverpool, England, Sarah Jane has weathered many storms at the theatre and produced and directed many successful shows. She's been a visionary theatre leader, and when many theatres had to scale back during the pandemic, Northwest Children's Theatre actually got a new space. The theater converted a former movie multiplex in downtown Portland into a couple of much-needed new spaces for themselves, but also available to other theater artists. They just opened Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It runs until December 29th at the Judy on Broadway. And with me to talk about all this is artistic director Sarah Jane Hardy. Welcome back to Stage and Studio on Arts Watch.
Thank you, Dima. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you. It's been a while. It's been a couple of years. And I sort of did the math in my head, but has it been about 25 years since
I started at the Children's Theater as a guest director in 2002.
Okay.
And then I became the artistic director in the season 2006-07.
Okay, you're getting close. You're getting close to 20 years.
Yeah.
So maybe I need to scale that back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew that you started really early, so I was trying to do the math in my head. I mean, nobody really wants to think about all that time anyway, right?
No, it feels like yesterday.
It does feel like yesterday. I know, and the year goes by fast.
Yeah.
So I got a chance to see your new home at the Judy on Broadway in a couple of productions that I saw down there, downtown. And kudos to you, your whole team. It's a whole wonderful space with so many options for large or small productions. There are about three theaters there, right?
Yeah, we have a black box theater that seats, you know, anywhere from 80 to 100, 110. That's flexible, so it depends how you arrange it. And then we have, you know, a straight-on theater. I wouldn't call it a proscenium because it doesn't have some of the bells and whistles, but proscenium style that seats about 220, 240, depending on the age of the audience. And then we have a cinema that has also been used as a performance space, but we use it also for cinema type things. And that seats about 185. And then we have three large open studios.
That's pretty tremendous. And it's quite an accomplishment. So many theaters were pulling back right after the pandemic and the economy and everything. How were you able to do that?
Well, we did purchase it. We're in a lease. So we have a long lease. It'll definitely outlive me and pretty much everybody else here on staff. So,
wow, that's a long lease. A long lease
for the foreseeable future. And you know, we had been looking for a home, as you know, I think the search for a new location for Northwest Children's Theater actually started before I did at the theater.
I think it
ebbed and flowed over the decades. But just before the pandemic hit, it had sort of hit critical mass. We knew that we were not able to renew our lease on the Cultural Center in Northwest Portland. And, you know, we had been through so many scenarios at that point, looking for a new home. And every time we found something that we thought would work, we would run it down with, you know, internally as a business plan, and then from an artistic perspective, and then from a fundraising and, you know, community impact perspective. So by the time the pandemic hit, we had a pretty strong sense of who we were, what we were able to tolerate as an organization, what our contribution was to the community, and how best to harness the folks that care deeply about us and have the means to support us.
Yeah.
And it happened very rapidly. You know, we had worked with Turner Construction, who were at one point going to build a facility for us prior to the pandemic. And we ixnayed that very quickly when everything shut down. But they were actually working on this building on 1000 Broadway. And they called us. It was about a year or so later. And they were like, I don't know if you guys are still looking, but there's this, you know, empty cinema space in the basement of this building. Are you guys interested? And at that point, you know, we were able to walk in very quickly and say, we can see how this will work. And because, you know, of the price of real estate in downtown Portland at the time, we were able to get a lease that seemed affordable and also able to mobilize the effort very quickly. I mean, from the first time we walked into the building until we opened to the public was, I think, 14 months total.
Yeah, it was fast.
crazy.
It seemed fast. Yeah.
Sure felt fast.
Yeah. I mean, especially from your point of view, right? You know?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it is better than buying, but it's almost the same, isn't it? Because a lifelong lease, you know, yeah. I mean, that's pretty secure, let's just say.
It sure is, you know. And I think that, you know, this way we're not responsible for some of the things that we were responsible for in the other building.
Right.
That, which sure feels good, you know, when we had the flood last year, yes, which was devastating to so many organizations. Our landlords were just absolutely fantastic. They were they worked with us every step of the way. And, you know, we really wouldn't be here without them. And
really affected because, you're in the basement. You know,
we were in the basement and we had a sprinkler bus just outside and we had a show running and it was a whole thing.
Wow. Well, that's good to hear that they were so responsive.
They were fantastic.
You know, it's still a pretty great accomplishment because, I mean, not even, you know, a lot of theaters can afford to do a lease. You know, they do short-term rentals. So what are your future plans? I mean, especially since space is the number one, venues are the number one thing for theaters, you know, small theater companies especially, you know, to find something affordable. What are your future plans, you know, for theater and for, you know, for your theater and what you're doing, but also rentals for the community?
So, I mean, this is, the building is called the Judy Kafori Center for Youth Arts. And that's named after our founder, Judy Kafori, who was also our major donor for the renovation of the space. And she's been intimately involved with the theater since it was founded over 35 years ago. And the vision for the building and how this intertwines with the vision for Northwest Children's Theater is to provide, to stake a claim in downtown Portland for centering the perspective of youth, specifically younger children, and their relationship to art, specifically performing arts. And so as we work through our strategic plan, we're looking for ways to find a home for Northwest Children's Theater. We want to strengthen the roots of Northwest Children's Theater in the organization, and we do want to be the primary user of the space. And so we have our classes. We have classes in there on Saturdays and Sundays, and every time school is out for camp breaks. We have our advanced training programs that take a lot of use in the black box. We do, and then of course our main stage productions that are sort of the bread and butter of the production side of the company. And those things will continue. They'll develop because the space is different. They'll evolve, but they will continue on as the foundational stone of the building. But then we're also available for all other kinds of youth arts partnerships and rentals. I think we had over a dozen organizations that are youth centered in the building last year, from schools to performing groups to individual artists that perform for children. Sometimes it's a partnership. Sometimes they'll work with our students and we'll create something collaboratively and together. And other times they're just looking for a space and it's a really good fit for our community. And so we can cross promote, we can keep the building alive and lively, and we can also provide some support to the organizations that, as you say, that's not what their mission is. They're not interested in taking care of a building. It's a huge responsibility. And there are plenty of organizations that, you know, all of their energy goes into creating just the work. So we're here to offer a helping hand then. Outside of those sort of child-friendly hours, we look for partnerships with organizations that have artists that are exciting to us as artists. And that's been a super fun part of this entire journey in the last, 18 months or so, has been reconnecting with artists that I have worked with in the past or meeting new artists. You know, one of the first things we did in the space was the Risk Reward Festival last year. And that was just so fun to see the space used in that way, which it hadn't been before. I think you were at the Hatchery with Many Hats, which was another fantastic use of the space. We've had, 24-hour devising festival with Hand to Mouth. We did a partnership with Renegade Opera in the cinema, which was super exciting. So, we have this whole other artistic, there's like feeding us artistically, right? Because we work primarily for children, but most of the people who work here and who make art here make art for all age audiences. And so finding a way to engage, sort of across the work has been really fun. Introducing them to the work of Northwest Children's Theater and to child and multi-generational audiences. And also a reminder for us that not all audiences are under 12 years old. Some interesting theater happens for adults too. And it's just been really great.
Well, yeah. And it just seems like, it's such a great resource and a hub, you know, an artistic hub, which is so needed, you know, mm-hmm. on so many different levels, and especially for smaller theater companies and other production companies. I'm really like that you're also focusing the theater itself, Northwest Children's Theater, is focusing on smaller productions as well as your school program. What's the thinking in that? Because you used to do large scale productions, huge, to fill up that huge space in Northwest.
We sure did. We had a very, very, very wide, flat space with a lot of choreography that went from side to side. Got really good at that. Very few diagonal lines. Yes, this space is significantly smaller. The room is significantly more intimate, which we really enjoy. And I also think too, you know, I think John Ellingson, who's my associate artistic director, and he and I work very closely together on the artistic side of the main stage productions. And I think both he and I were feeling a little tapped out in the old space creatively. You know, I think we thought we'd looked under every stone and, you know, in every dark corner of the room for inspiration. And it's been a real shot in the arm, actually, for us, just, you know, purely artistically, to be in a different space that we don't understand. We don't know what's possible. We don't know how to make it sing. And the thought for us was that, you know, as we, and part of this is artistic, but also part of this is the business model and also the community-centered approach. You know, as we emerged from the pandemic, specifically being downtown, we wanted to be responsive. And I think with those big productions, there's a huge ramp up. You know, you program them 2 years out. They're a year and a half in the planning. They have to run forever to recoup anything like the expense that you put into them. And so with a smaller footprint show, we felt like we were able to offer a more diverse range of programming because we were able to change shows more regularly, you know, and have different things happening in the space. We would be more nimble and dynamic. We would be able to open the doors to more collaborations and to more artistic voices because we didn't have to plan so far in advance and we didn't have to have such a massive footprint, both with audiences and, you know, within the production company for every single show. So we kind of, for the last year and a half, we have not announced a season. We've worked far more, you know, like a show to show, event to event, trying to plan 3 to 6 months out so that we can, again, be responsive, be dynamic, find out who needs the space, who wants to play with us in the space, and then also what our audiences want. We, you know, we are 35 years old, and I think at the old building, we had a very strong sense of our audience. We built up a very strong connection. There was a deep level of trust between us and our subscribers. You know, we had a lot of artistic freedom to play in that sandpit, and they would go along with us because they knew that they were going to, you know, at least have an interesting time, even if they didn't love every show. So we went from having a very strong understanding of our audiences and them of us to the pandemic where we closed. And we were closed for 4 years altogether. We had an extra year of closure because of the move. And so by the time we reopened, those relationships had, I mean, that's about our cycle for audiences. Yeah. You know, children are very interested in ages sort of 5 to 9, maybe sometimes 12, depending on the kid. And so we were really building from scratch and in a new location and a new theater space. And so as we have, you know, we knew coming out of that whole period of transition that we were going to have to do a lot of listening. We were going to have to offer, you know, make our offerings as authentic as we possibly could and ask our audiences, invite them back in, and then listen to what they had to say and respond accordingly. What kind of shows are they looking for? What kind of experiences are they having? And so we're sort of, you know, 1.5 years into that, which I suspect will be like a 3-year endeavor before I feel like we, you know, are back on solid ground in terms of that relationship between audience and performer. And we're part of this, you know, significant effort to revitalize downtown Portland. And like, we're right in the middle of it. And we want to bring families back into the city center. And we want children to be exposed to art and performance in the center of the city that they live in. We think that's an important offering. And so, you know, we're sort of trying to intentionally build towards something that is cohesive and sustainable.
Okay. Well, you know, it seems like you're doing that. You know, you did talk about the large shows. I mean, they were pretty impressive. I remember your collaboration with South Asian artist Anita Menon, like Chitra, the Girl Prince, and and more well-known musicals like Mary Poppins. And those are, I mean, I totally believe that you need to plan them out 2 years in advance, and they're huge casts and scheduling and budget-wise, you know, to recoup your costs. So it does make sense to think, you know, in some ways more like a dance company, you know, where you don't need the whole season. You just tell people, you know, like 6 months in advance or 3 months in advance so you can do the marketing and make it affordable.
Yeah, that's the
plan. I mean, that's the ticket too. You know, the affordability for audiences, you know, especially family audiences.
Yeah, so, and especially family audiences that have no history of attending the theater as a family.
Exactly.
It wasn't in their budget. They didn't know. And they're sort of, they're trying it out. And that's always been true to a degree with the kind of audiences that we create work for, because they're so young and families are just testing it. But it's been, you know, double or triply so since the pandemic.
Well, and I think it helps that it's in a movie theater, because that is familiar to families.
Oh,
that
they
is their lived
popcorn
experience.
And come in and very much so.
It's more familiar and not the formality of people think theater has to be, right?
That was also a delight with this building. You know, we were able to make it as bright and colorful as we wanted to, and make it, you know, we wanted the children when they came in to feel like, oh, this space is for them, right?
It does feel that way. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. The adults are there, but the adults are guests in the space.
Yeah.
And, you know, it feels very, hopefully feels very child-centered.
I think it does. You know, it almost feels, it feels like you're entering sort of a celebration, you know, when you go into the space. Especially, I love the movie theater, the popcorn, you know, sense of it. And it's just very colorful and bright, you know, so all of that works. So you just opened a holiday show.
Yes,
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. We all know the song.
Yes.
Based on that classic song, I would assume.
Yes, that classic movie.
And the classic movie, the animated movie. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so there's familiarity in that. So tell us more about the production, and who are some of the people you want to highlight in it?
Sure. So we actually did this last year. We did the show last year.
Yeah, I remember.
And we've done it. We wanted to sort of explore the idea of a holiday tradition for young audiences. And we also wanted to, you know, this was the first larger show. And this is Northwest Children's Theater, big show these days. It's a big show for this space. Nothing like the scale of the other shows we did, but definitely much bigger than some of the things we're offering right now. Bigger in the cast size and bigger in all of the things. It's a spectacle for us. It's a fantastic spectacle. It has some absolutely beautiful costumes and very familiar music. It has some great characters, some great youth performers that are really knocking it out of the park this year in particular, and some new folks for our audiences, and also some very familiar. So Kevin Michael Moore is back.
Okay.
Kevin Michael Moore has done, you know, a dozen plus shows with us in our history. He's back as Yukon Cornelius, the prospector. And then we have Maxine Nuessa, who is playing Rudolph, and she is a member of our youth program. She's been with us for a long time.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
They play Rudolph. Okay.
Yeah. And let me think who else we have. We have Eric Zulu is Sam the Snowman. And that role is doubled by Eric and then also a youth performer, Stella McKay. And they are switching off performances. We've always had young and youth and adult performers share the stage on our main stage.
Yeah.
It's part of our training, but also we think that it's more impactful for young audiences to see youth on stage.
Yeah, they want to see themselves represented, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Which feels obvious, but is not how it's done in most large cities in America. You know, when you go to a children's theater, it's all adult equity actors that are playing all the parts. And there's advantages to that too, but we've chosen a different route. And so we have some great youth performers. What else do I want to highlight? The singing is beautiful. It's interactive. It's playful.
Well,
it's
see, that's
silly.
What I was going to ask you about, because I've been reading a lot about, I haven't seen Wicked yet, but the movie version of Wicked, how everybody's singing along and actually bugging a lot of people. But that probably happens a lot in your shows, though. I mean, not the bugging part, but the singing along part, right?
Yeah, we definitely, you know, I think a lot of the artists that work in youth theater, especially the lifers like myself, part of the reason that we're attracted to it is because it's so playful from a formalist perspective. You know, when I wasn't doing children's theater, I was either sort of directing and choreographing large-scale musicals as bread and butter, or I was working in sort of experimental avant-garde theater. That was my jam. And there's this intersection in children's theater where, you know, the minds of the audiences are so open. And especially today when people are struggling to enjoy the theater, right? A lot of people are struggling to get out of their house, get into the show, even if they have a good time when they're there, right? Audiences are struggling to connect back with theater in the numbers that we need them to support the business model and for us all to continue to make the work that we love to make for a healthy, you know, a healthy sector. And obviously some of that's funding. Huge part of that is funding. But just as it directly relates to audiences being excited to come to the theater, when we have a youth audience, we really have an obligation, I think, to experiment with the form. And why should they come and see us when they can see some of the best performers in the world ever on their little screen, in their little room, by them, like at any point? And they've always had that. Also, from a community perspective, especially the older kids can see all their peers making content on social media, right? Now it's sort of infiltrated, that virtual situation has infiltrated every aspect of their lives. And so what is it that we have that they don't have? Why bother? What is it that makes theater special? And so we spend a lot of our time creatively talking about that, talking about, you know, how do we want the kids to behave and how do we want them to know that we know that they're there? And how do we want them to feel when they're in the space? And we don't want to be a shh kind of theater, right? We want the kids to be able to be boisterous and loud, because one of the things that we can offer them that a screen can't is that we can respond to them. And if they are quiet and silent and in the dark, they may as well be in a movie across the hall. You know what? So we have really embraced the interactive side and the playful side of what's happening in that room to try to tease out for ourselves where we belong in this landscape for a developing child. What is it? Obviously, a huge part of it is community, because they don't get to, oftentimes they're watching these things in isolation at home on a screen. So the fact that they get to come here with their families and with their friends and with their school groups and with a bunch of strangers that, you know, they share a city with, we know that, we understand that. But as far as the art is concerned, how can we engage them in a way that is both unique and compelling? And I think this room with its intimacy gives us a really great opportunity to play in that. And so we'll take a play that is fairly traditional, sort of, you know, proscenium style theater, and really tear it apart and try to get to the essence of what is it about Yukon Cornelius that is entertaining and exciting? And how can I direct the show in a way that highlights that? As opposed to we just sit there and look at him. How can I engage the kids in that way?
Well, I liked how your background is in musical theater and experimental theater. And I don't see how you can't marry that together, because you do need to. Your competition is the YouTube videos or the TikTok videos or anything, you know, anything that they can see on the streaming services. I think your key that you talked about was making it more interactive.
Yeah.
You know, so they're involved. So they have like some kind of contact with human beings, right?
Yes.
And that's also for families too, because I think, you know, a lot of families just don't go to theater. And I'm also thinking about families who might be immigrant families too. You can instantly connect with that interactivity.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not like what, you know, my Chinese immigrant mom would say, you know, when I did a Shakespeare play, oh, I don't like that talky-talky stuff, you know, because you're just being talked to. But this is 100%. Something different. And it is experimental, right?
It certainly feels it. I don't see it happening a lot in a lot of the places that I visit and in the children's theater world or, you know, in the theater world. And I think a lot of adult audiences, they might be irritated by it. They might be turned off by it. But the child audiences are not. And I think so much of, you know, if you ever watch a child watching a show, they're talking back. Like they will stand up and talk back to that screen. And I don't know what it does to your developing mind to be talking at something that never gives back, you know?
You start getting weird, I think, you know, and you can't help it.
Yeah. And so I think what we have to offer them is that we're in the room with them. We're all in this together. That
like you can respond. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting to watch those loud crowds, especially the school shows, figuring out for themselves that they want to be quiet at this point because they actually want to hear what comes next.
Yeah.
As opposed to being told that they have to be quiet because they're, quote, in the theater.
Yeah. And it makes it more fun too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of it. You know, why go?
Yeah.
You know, if you're not enjoying it. Yeah. You know, recently I wrote a libretto of a youth opera for Portland Opera. And one of the questions that I have from audience members and also from press is, how do you write for young people? And I kind of, my response was, I don't really write any differently. I just don't have swear words or, you know, like adult situations, but it's about a compelling story and keeping somebody's interest. Do people ask you similar questions about directing young people? Like, how do you do it differently?
I have definitely been asked that. I think what is more common is people who view it as a stepping stone to real theater.
Real.
Right?
Yeah.
I think that, and it's like, no, we're, a lot of us are here from choice. Like, there was a point at which we could very easily have chosen a different path, but now we're kind of here. And I think, to me, the differences are fairly, as a director, I would say that I try to respect that the people in the audience that the show is created for may not have some of the hangups that some of the grownups might have. I also know that for my audiences, they're really good at letting me know when they're bored. You know, there's no facade. They don't pretend to enjoy themselves. So if my show's not engaging and entertaining, then it doesn't really matter how beautiful or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I think I would do that in a regular show that wasn't for children too. Like,
yeah.
So no, I don't know that I do get asked that a lot. I get asked, is this all I do?
I think there's certain parameters. There's different parameters, but it's basically the same. Yeah. You don't want anybody to be bored in any play.
Right.
You know, what is the point of that?
Yeah.
You know, you have to sit there and really intellectualize it and then you'll be more intellectual and we'll all be good from it. No, I think it's just boring. You know?
I agree. And I do think children are capable of experiencing really sophisticated art.
Yes.
You know, in the time I've been with North West Children's Theater, we have produced some crazy sophisticated art.
Yes.
And, you know, we've had free jazz saxophone solos on that stage that have lasted 11 minutes. And kids have enjoyed every second of it.
Wow. That's awesome.
You know? So don't never underestimate the mind of a child to go on a journey with you.
I mean, as long as it's something interesting, you know? And that's true with anything. So I appreciate your answer on that. I'm wondering too about some success stories, because I'm sure after your couple decades of work with the children's theater, you know, you've had people go through your program and become professional theater artists. I'm just, what are some of your precious memories you want to share?
Oh my gosh, I'm horrible at that question. There's so many of them.
Choose one.
Okay, I'm going to choose two. One is that Leah Zawada is a former Northwest Children's Theater student, and she's currently in 12th Night at PCS. And I haven't seen her yet, but I'm going to go see her this holiday season. And that's very exciting. Because oftentimes when they do go on and work in the business, they don't do it down the street. So I don't get to see it. I would say this last summer, we had an alumni panel, and we had 30 alumni come and talk to our current students. About life after Northwest Children's Theater, life after college, life after high school, depending on if college was on the cards or not. And I think talking to a bunch of kids who, for the most part, desperately want to go do theater, right? That was largely the audience that they came to. And listening to those students and the journeys that they have been on. You know, we had students that have gone on and done professional theater for sure, and gone on and done, you know, been on Broadway or been in a movie or, you know, done some TV work, done well in TV work, but we also had at least half of them that have gone on and done other things. And to hear them talk about their journey sort of through theater and back into the non-theater world and what they've taken from theater and how they've applied that to their lives was so moving and so impactful. And to see them give those answers to these very eager 16, 17, 18-year-olds that's a memory I'll keep forever.
I always ask this of especially veteran artists.
Yeah.
What keeps you going?
You know, At this time of year, just opened the holiday show. I'm not sure.
A little bit of eggnog for you.
Yeah, but, a little bit.
No,
of eggnog.
I mean, seriously, it's hard. You know, it's hard work, and especially running a theater is very hard work. So, what gives your, I guess, your spiritual side, your internal side, your, you know, that motivates you that to create art? What keeps you going with that?
I think I'm a puzzler by nature. I love to problem solve. And the combination in this moment, the combination of the hurt in the community, the faces on families who are trying to figure it out post-pandemic and in this new world with everything that's happening in the world and America at this moment, experiencing that myself, being part of that puzzle, that problem, how do we live in this moment? Is a thought all day, every day. And my answer to that has always been to approach it through theater, right? Combined with the puzzle of the Judy, you know, I'll stand with John Ellingson, my associate artistic director, and Nick Fenster, our managing director, and we'll kind of stand on the mezzanine of the building when it's working. We'll look down, it'll be shows in two spaces, and then a rental, and a birthday party, and a bunch of theater classes, and all the screens are firing, and the popcorn's popping, and there's just, you know, a couple of thousand families just milling through the building over the course of the day. And we know that it works when that all aligns. I mean, and it's so our job is to figure out how to make it work like that enough days of the year that we can sustain it. So right now those are the two things that we're wrestling with, you know, and again, the business side and the art side. And ideally those two things work in harmony. You know, if the art is meeting the need of a community, then the community will show up. You know that, like the community will come and with open arms, they'll support you. That's trying to solve that problem is as engaging to me today as it was the first time I ever tried to do it.
Well, my next question is about your long-term goals, but I think you kind of answered that, is to keep everything going.
Yeah, my long-term goal is to get my next goal is to try to get this building, to try to find out one way to make this building sustainable in the near term, right? And then who knows? You know, at some point, somebody else has got to do this job. You know, my kids are all grown up and, you know, I'm not sure where my future is beyond Northwest Children's Theater, but I do know that for now, at least, I'm wrestling with this large challenge. And, you know, I'm still learning so much every day about this space and about this moment. And, you know, that's enough to keep me going through the long days ahead.
Yeah. And we have some long days coming up. I'm thinking as far as the next few years.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, it's about what can I do to bring a little bit of grace right now and healing? Because I think so many of us just need that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm so tired of arguments. I'm tired of divides. What can we do? And if there's a way to accomplish that, you got to try. You got to try.
100%. And I think, you know, when we do a show our accomplishments in the room are often very small. They feel very small in this moment, you know, but I have to believe that you make enough of those small moments and you make a bigger moment.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And the impact will grow.
Enough. I don't know if it's sand, but you can make a pearl, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't take much sometimes, but I think it can be meaningful. And this conversation's been really meaningful too. So thank you, Sarah Jane Hardy, for catching up today. And you can find out more info on Northwest Children's Theater and the holiday show Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer at nwct.org. I also have that link at stageandstudio.org or orartswatch.org. Sarah Jane Hardy, thank you for this talk today.
Yeah, thank you, Dima. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. I'm so glad we could catch up. That's it for Stage and Studio on Arts Watch. Till the next conversation, I'm Dima Lo Roberts.